We are on Chesamadeus. Let's see. About 10 lines or so from the top. We are... There's no two dots over here to help us out. 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. Yeah, there's that. And then it's just two lines after that. Okay? Kid Amruhu Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi Lubinay. So the previous Gemara talked about how we're supposed to say to learn Shnayim Mikra Vecha Targum. We're supposed to learn the Chumash every week to be Marber Sedra. So over here, it says that Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi used to give advice to his children. And what would he say Lubinay to his children? He would say, Hashlimu parsho saichu im atzibor. So actually we touched upon this last week. Finish up the parsho with the tzibor. Shnai mikra vecha targum. You should read the chumash over twice. And also a targum, which we discussed, that might be a translation. Could be a targum unculus. It could be Rashi. Different interpretations of what that means. You should do that all the time. Make sure that's one of the things he warned his kids. Okay. And then that's... We talked about that last week. Now, a few other things that he advised his children. V'hizharu baridin. You should be very careful with the veins. Be careful with the veins. Which, what is that referring to? So, it's Kid Rabbi Yehuda. Like what Rabbi Yehuda said. It's not that Rabbi Yehuda said elsewhere in the Mishnah. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, ad sheyishchot es haridin. You should not eat this meat unless it's slaughtered all the way to its veins. And Rashi explains, if you see the fourth line from the top, Rashi says, Ad sheyishchot es haridin. What's the significance of he's advising his children how to do shechita? Right? Question is, why? What's the significance of this? Kedei sheyotze kol hadam. He wanted to make sure that all the blood will come out of this animal. V'lo amar kein elo b'of. He said this is only referring to a bird. Hoyel v'tzolhu kuhu k'echad. Because it's completely roasted together. So he was warning him as far as slaughtering fowl. That you should make sure that you should do a good job. So that the shechita removes all the blood from the animal. That was his warning. Kind of seems like two random things. The Mefarshim don't explain why those two things. But he said be careful when you about learning. Say Shnai Mikra Vecha Targum, and also make sure that when you do the Shechit, it's done properly. And then there's the third thing that he warned, the Gemara continues, and perhaps there's a way you can connect all three together, it's possible, I'm not sure how, but V'hizharu bezaking. You have to be very careful with regard to someone who's elderly. Sheshachach Talmudo, that forgot his learning. V'had machmas onso, because of some unforeseen circumstances. He developed some type of disability, right? And unfortunately, he lost his ability to retain his learning. So you can't show any disrespect to such a person. In fact, you should treat that person with the same dignity and respect as when he was younger and he had the capacity to be able to teach and to be able to give good advice and based on his vast Torah knowledge. So to this individual, even though he doesn't know anything, maybe he's senile, developed Alzheimer's, whatever it may be, but nonetheless, you have to show him the same amount of respect. So why would that be necessary? So the Gemara tells us a very interesting reason why we can see this by inanimate objects. Diamrin, because it says that luchos, v'shivri luchos, munachos ba'arim. If you open up the Kodesh HaKadoshim, the Aron HaKodesh, and you'll find in the Aron are luchos. But not the second set of luchos, even the first set, the ones which were smashed. The first set of luchos, is although they were once in all of its glory, they were beautiful, however they were destroyed, just like a person who had Torah knowledge and his knowledge was removed from him, was destroyed, because of something beyond his control, so too it was beyond the luchos control. They didn't do anything wrong. They were destroyed because of our problems. So therefore, you would think, well, they're destroyed, so throw them away. They're garbage, right? Look, we have a much better, new and improved set of luchos. No. They were in the Aron together with the ones which were shalim, which were complete. Shows that you have to show the same level of respect for the Shibri Luchos, a person who lost his learning, just as much as someone who has it now. Pretty powerful statement. So that's the significance, that even though they were destroyed, they you still have to treat them the same dignity and respect. And that's how you should treat a Talmud Chacham, with that same level of dignity and respect. Good evening. So those were the three pieces of advice that he shared with his children. Continuing the Gemara, Armuhu Rava Libnei. So that was a few things that some pieces of advice that Rabbi Shuben Levi gave to his children. We're now going to see Armuhu Rava, which is about six lines before the lines get wider. Which is the first word in the line is Be'aron. Armuhu Rava Libnei. Rava said to his children. Rava also gave advice to his children.
Who's in that?
I don't know.
They weren't going to listen.
It might not be good advice. We'll see what type of advice it was. He said, "Kishatem chotchin basar, when you cut meat, al tachtachu al gav hayad. Do not cut the meat on your hand. You're holding a nice slab of meat and you're cutting it like this.
Oh, you're going to cut your hand. It's obvious.
Right. Well, that was the advice he gave. So there's two reasons. There's a very interesting logic between the two reasons. Ika de Amri, one is the logical reason, is Mishum Sakana. It's dangerous. You're going to cut yourself, right? But Ika de Amri, and some say, it's not because he wasn't concerned that his kid was going to cut himself and they'd have to be rushed to the hospital. Rather, it's Mishum Kilkel Suda. You're going to ruin your meal, right? It's like a person, don't shoot me, you're going to ruin my suit, you know? So, Kilkel Suda, which meant that he was just as cautious about things which seem to be as less significant as the preservation of one's life, which is hard to understand. But Rashi over here says, Mishum Kilkel Suda, what does that mean? Af b'chabura katana. Even if, let's say, small little wound, yatsa dam, a little blood will come out, and what will happen? V'ilachich es hamachel, it'll get, ruin the food. V'yimas es hamasubin, it'll make the people that are reclining there grossed out. They're going to see you're bleeding, they're like, oh, I lost my appetite. Which means that it wasn't not only for your own safety, but also...
Is it because it's gross or because it's not kosher?
It says v'yamis es hamus.
They're talking about cooked meat here or raw meat.
I would imagine
this has to be cooked meat.
Yeah, cooked meat.
Because otherwise, you know, either people, you know, you got to put it on the Barbie, right? Or you could serve it to them.
Right. I would. I think it's talking about it's already prepared. Especially Rashi says that there was already masubin. There were people reclining, eating their meal, and they'd be grossed out. You see that, Alan? It's not just the person doing it; it's also the people that are there that. It would ruin their appetite. So it meant to be sensitive to the people around you, to have proper manners, so that they'll be able to enjoy their meal. That was the advice, the first piece of advice that he gave his children. And if that sounds a little strange, we're going to get to two more. The one we're going to see now is very difficult. He says, "Ve'alteshua al mitas aramis." Whatever you do, when you need to sit down because your legs have given way and you're tired, never sit on an Aramean woman's bed. Don't ever do that. We'll explain. We'll give a few reasons and significance why. Yeah, I guess you took a peek. Yeah, we'll get to that in a second. This one's a little bit more tame. That a person, when the people are davening in shul, don't walk by that shul. Right? Al tavru, do not pass by the back door of the shul when people are davening. And the obvious reason is because it looks like you're not interested.
Scoffing at the davening.
Right, it's not
important.
Not important, okay.
My biggest question with this whole thing?
Yeah.
Didn't he have more important things to tell the shul?
Well, I would imagine when it comes to, say, observance of the mitzvos, that those are givens. These are bonuses. These are extras. But even so, you're saying, like, there are more important things than...
Yeah, I mean, there has to be something between Adam, Machavero to deal with. I mean, the whole Pirkei Avos is telling us all kinds of elements and entities.
Right.
To be involved in it. And here we deal with...
This is just sidebars. No, these were givens.
There has to be something symbolic about these things. These can't be literal, per se.
Right.
I'm trying to find, the first one, what I'm seeing is a common thread, is being meticulous.
About, based on what, Rubba's advice to his kids, or Rabbi Shimon Levy's?
The one about Marvin, the Sedra, and with...
Oh, and the Shechita.
To make sure that all of us be meticulous about every element of all those three, that's a common thread to those. To be, precise and exacting.
Right.
Here.
Yeah, right. What did he say? He, be careful about how you cut your meat.
No, that was the first thing. Saying that. He was saying, be careful how you cut your meat. He says, don't cut the meat while it's lying in your hand.
Right.
Okay, so now there has to be some symbolism here.
Right. That sounds.
It's like, what is the meat? Is meat something like Torah?
Okay. Right.
I mean, there has to be something than just, this is just too mundane for a father to go ahead and say to son, especially Rava.
Correct. That's true.
But I guarantee you that no one is even explaining what the allegory of these three elements are.
It's right. No, I haven't seen anything. But, yeah, the idea, I guess, of holding the meat in your hand is some symbolism, perhaps, of being selfish and not keeping it for yourself, and that's not thinking about other people, which in turn make it's a good question. I'm not sure, and maybe when the Gemara is going to discuss the next two a little bit more in depth, that might help us. It may not. Okay, so the second thing that Rava advised his children is Valteshu, or in the dot now, Valteshu al mitas aramis. Do not sit down on a bed of an Aramean woman. Now, what exactly does this mean? Okay, so the Gemara gives three answers. We'll see them, and then we'll take one at a time. Ikadarmi, some say, what does it mean not to sit on a this type of a bed? It means don't act like they do when it's time to go to sleep. Lo tignu below kriya shema. Make sure not to go to sleep before you say the shema. So, why is it aramis specifically? I mean, someone who's not a non-Jewish person, when they go to sleep, they just go to sleep. So, he was advising that not only during your day you're supposed to function in a certain way to distinguish yourself from the rest of the world, even when you're going to sleep, or even at that moment, you should also be careful to in what you do. So, I mean, based on that interpretation, the first thing he advises is be careful about how you're eating, the cutting of the meat, which could have just to do with eating. Careful about how you eat, and be careful how you sleep. So, we see those connections. Those are things which a person would maybe think have no relationship, or it's not that important to think about. Okay.
But why don't we just tell them, be meticulous about saying Kriya Shema Shel Arvis, Kriya Shema Alamita?
Why is he
using the specific thing of the bed of an Aramea?
Right. So according to this answer, it shows that perhaps all the things he was saying was really alluding to something deeper.
So like don't follow any customs of a non-Jew.
Right.
Like Aramea Oved Odi, so therefore in that pattern, it's don't follow any sequence of what they're about.
Right.
Because it just can't be just only one entity you're talking about.
Why does he say a bed?
Why didn't he just say Kriya Shema Alamita? Why does it be meticulous about not missing the tefillah? That's all he meant.
That could be all he meant. And what he was saying, if you just say, don't make sure not to miss saying the Shema, it might not have such an impact. But if you say, don't be like that non-Jew, it's like more of an impact. Wow, not saying the Shema at night, I'm really already associating myself, making myself, assimilating myself to their patterns. So it could be that if that's all he was saying, he was trying to do it to really teach his child that even not saying the Shema is a way that you're acting like them. Don't be like that. Be different. Distinguish yourself. Okay. That's one answer. This is perhaps the most difficult answer, which we're going to just see these next five words, and then we're going to ask a very powerful question. V'ikud de'amri, some say, what was Rav advising? Rav's advice was, delo tinasvu girta. Make sure, my children, whatever you do, that when it comes time to getting married, do not marry girta. Right? A convert. Don't marry a convert. That's what he was telling his children. Which, all the mafarshim over here, says, what are you talking about? For example, you have a guy, his name is Yeshua. There's a book written after him called Sefer Yeshua. He married a woman by the name of Rachav, which, So she wasn't Jewish.
Nice.
Rabbi Akiva, Ashes, Tunis Rufus. He married someone who was related to, also not someone not Jewish. And Boaz married, based on the story of the book, Rus. All these people were not Jewish. They converted.
Well, there's an answer, like Rabbi Scroll.
Ah.
That he was a Kohen, and his son was a Kohanim, and they were not allowed to marry if he had Kohen's honorary viewers.
Right. So that was like his quote, right. A Kohen, they're Kohanim. So there's nothing wrong. The answer is right. There's nothing wrong with marrying a Gioris. However, he was just advising because you're a Kohen. Which again is difficult because if they have that specific halacha, certain law, so what is he adding? Like, why would he tell them that? You can tell them all things they're not supposed to do, right? Don't come in contact with a mace because you're also Kohen. Why is he telling them that? So that's actually the nicer answer.
Yeah.
But another answer that's presented, that was in the Ian Yaakov, the Yavetz says like this. He says, "De'ein mevi'in raya min nevi'im." You're not allowed to bring proofs from these guys like Yeshua and Boaz, who are prophets, very great people, v'rabosenu hakadmonim, and these earlier rabbinical figures, asher hofia ruach hakodesh lehem. They obviously had a divine connection to Hashem. He was actually required, he felt an obligation to do so. Not everyone else has to do such a thing. So therefore, according to this answer, the Yavetz is saying that it's really not advisable at all. It's not approved just because we find other great people that married someone who was a convert. That doesn't necessarily mean that that's the greatest thing for you to do. The question is why. Sometimes Jews by choice are greater and better because they take it upon themselves as opposed to it was forced upon them. So that's something obviously to think about.
It says that Hashem himself loves Geras and a Gerim and Almanus. We say it every day at the Talmud.
That's right. So
if Hashem likes someone, we're not supposed to like him.
So this is very
sense, right?
But that was the advice that he gave.
But because again, there's halacha against Kohanim and marrying Geras, obviously.
Okay. Right. If you want to stick to that answer,
but that one makes sense.
Yeah, but traditionally today, okay,
yeah,
among the Spartan,
right,
marrying Giora is like taboo. It breaks families up. I mean, but to the point of like total destruction of the family.
Really?
Yeah. But they can eat kidneys.
But I mean, but yeah. They're following this as a pattern of strict reality.
There must be a significance to why they're so
right, because
particular.
We say Hashem, they say every day, they daven the same thing we do, that Hashem loves Gerim and Amana. So how do they, I would say, what's the matter with you? It's good enough for God, but it's not good enough for you. Okay. Who are you? You know? Okay. Makes no sense.
Okay. Their answer is, it doesn't mean I have to marry them. Right?
No,
but
there's another Indian.
But it's...
The Indian is far dim, it's far dim, a lot of them are Versos and so on and so forth.
Right.
So for them, the concept of Svaradi Tahor, in fact, a lot of them have a name like Sid, Sutton, Sat, you know, it's all abbreviation Svaradi Tahor, to show that I come from a pure lineage going all the way back. It's a very big thing because there was like a sign of weakness that I wasn't one that gave in and got mixed in with the Goyim and so on to save myself.
Right.
You know, it's a little different Indian than you have with the. But then it carries a little more of a stigma to be in
I don't want to say that there was a Holocaust, the more Ashkenazim were affected who didn't convert, you know, whatever. We won't say that.
But that, this was the advice that he gave his children. All right. The Ikidami, there are those that say, what did he mean not to sit down on a bed of an aramis? It means aramis mamish. It means just don't worry about the shema. That's all right. You can marry whoever you want. That's all right. But make sure that when you sit down, don't sit down on one of their beds. That's one of the pieces of advice. Now, why would they give such advice? Mishum masid rab papa. Because of the story which happened to rab papa, and obviously this was headline news, and that everyone found out about this, and therefore they advised all their children to be very careful to disassociate themselves from these people. The rab papa also legabi aramis. The rab papa went to aramis, and it's brought down to the fortune because she owed him money. That's how it's brought down. Call. Right. So hotzia lo mita. So they said, well, let me wait for a second. Let me have a seat. Exactly. Let's just take a load off.
Cool.
Right. Wait a few minutes and I'll get the check for you. Umrlo. She said to him, shave, sit down. So Umrlo, he said, Aina yoshev, I will not sit down. Ad shtagvia esamita, until you lift up the bed. I want you to lift up the bed first. I want to see what's underneath. Right. So Hagvia, and she was obviously protested, but then he forced her to do it. And Hagvia Semita lift up the bed, and what was there? Umatza Sham Tinuk Mace. They found a little infant, a little kid, which was unfortunately had died. And obviously, what was her plan? Her plan was that.
Again, that he killed the kid and to get.
Put a blood libel.
Right, so that's what she was hoping to do. Mikan Amru Chachamim, from there, that point on, the Chachamim stated, Asli Sheval Mitas Aramis. You're not allowed to sit on her bed, on this woman, any person who's an Aramis, their bed. Which, again, could also be connected to the idea of disassociating yourself from these types of people. By sitting down means you're there to stay for a little
exactly.
while.
Exactly. I think maybe there are other connotations over there more than you worry about a dead kid.
Could be. Could be. Right.
They're being kind of that.
Right. Could be. So that was the second thing that Rava advised his children. The last, which seems to be the most the kindest one, the one which is not so difficult to understand, the Al Tabra Achori Beis Achnesses V'Shar Shad Sibim Mispalim. Do not pass a shul during the time which they're davening. Misayale Rabbi Shimon Levi, the supports Rabbi Shimon Levi, the Yom Rabbi Shimon Levi, Asul Adam Shabra Achori Beis Achnesses V'Shar Shad Sibim Mispalim. It's pretty clear that that's what he said. You're not allowed to walk by a shul. If they're davening right now, you cannot walk by that shul. Because, again, what is that? What is the appearance? What does it look like? It looks like you
are... You're not davening.
Yeah. And if... Exactly. It's like you're running away, as Rashi says, from this shul. Now, that's not always. That law doesn't always apply. Right. That's what it sounds like. Yeah. Yeah, so it's like you're kind of like sneaking. Yeah, right, exactly. So the question is, so what happens if you're walking in Flatbush or in Borough Park where there's a hundred
rides? I mean, block, like a gas station.
So you can't walk, right? Because there's always a minion going
around.
Well,
I told you there's a minion every minute.
But if you look at that parade, then you're not walking behind you walk right
there. Right, which could even be even more brazen, like you don't care at all. But the Gemara explains that wouldn't be an issue here. Omar Abayi says, "Lo amar an el deleika pischachrina." The only problem time it's an issue is if there's no other door. But if there's another door, it's not a problem because people think, "Oh, he didn't want to go this way; he wants to go that way." He's just going through another entrance. That's all. So therefore, people won't have that perception that you weren't going to shul. V'lo amaran el deleika beikanist achrina. The only other problem, only time it's a problem, is that there's no other shul in town. Avol ika beikanist achrina leislanba. There's another shul, not a problem, right? So what? You're not going to shul. That doesn't mean anything bad about you. It just means you're going to the other shul. No problem. V'lo amaran, also this rule only doesn't apply el dolo daritunah. is only in a situation where you're not carrying tuna, doesn't mean the fish, but a package. You're,
oh,
right, you're, right, sorry. You're, that you're not carrying anything, below rahid, you're not running, below manach tefillin, you're not wearing tefillin, if you're doing one of these things, it's not an issue. Because if you have tefillin, it shows that you have a connection to spirit, right. And if you're running or you're carrying a package, it's because you're just too busy. It's not because you're denying anything, you just, you have other tasks that you're involved in. Now this one makes a little more sense to me, because Rava, being a leader, it wasn't enough for him to do the mitzvahs. He always had to be concerned about perceptions. He had to be concerned of what other people think of him. And therefore he said, you know, because we're in the limelight, he told his children, he said, you know, you have to be careful, not just about what you do and don't do as far as mitzvahs are concerned, but you also have to be careful as far as perceptions are concerned. And therefore that could perhaps be the reason why he said be careful about walking by a shul and not stepping in.
But even the mitzvah d'armas will also make sense.
Yeah, of course. People think, you know, maybe he's having relations, you know, you'll put yourself in that kind of position that people construe that, you know. You know,
right.
So that one makes sense. The meat in the hand doesn't make sense.
Maybe the meat in the hand stands for kashrus, something about kashrus and how, you know, you should conduct yourself as far as where you eat and how you eat and what you do and etiquette of eating and people at your table. Maybe that's the connotation over there. Because he's spoken about other things, you know, davening, about possibly illicit relations, and maybe, you know, about food. You know, these are, you know, basic tenets of Judaism.
So what are you saying, you think it is?
That it's about kashrus, the thing with the meat in the hand and the blood, and the whole thing has to do with, you know, that the meat should not have, you know, if you eat the meat and it's not kashrus properly, there's blood there, and a whole other, not, you know what I'm saying? So that's why.
No, but your blood is not.
I understand. That's what he's saying, but that, what he means is about, you know, blood. If you show the people that you're eating meat, then the meat wasn't kosher properly, that there's blood there and everything else like that, that's a bad thing. So he's talking about blood on your hand, but maybe he really means blood from the meat itself, that the meat wasn't kosher properly, and, you know, therefore you're eating tripe. People could, maybe you're eating tripus, you know, they were in Muncie eating, you know, whatever.
It's interesting that I was waiting for that. That what we saw in what Rashi said was the issue of the meat thing was the yamas es hamusubin. The people, you're going to cause the people that are there to be disgusted by you. So again, it has something to do with what other people are going to see.
Perception.
Yeah, it has something to do with that.
Even if they weren't disgusted, it's still with the culture of the brother that I'm doing.
Well, that's according to perhaps the other reason, not because of your cut your hand a lot, but just it says you cut your hand a chabura katana, a small amount.
The other two items is something where you have a mari dayan, that you're basically being very casual and routine about observing what you should be observing.
Right.
So how does this cutting it in the hand, you have to think, how could that...
Well, there's a Maris Ayin here about the fact that there's blood and the blood on the meat, and people think that, is that ain't kosher? Not watching with kashrus. It's just the same thing as all the other things, you know?
So it's
kind of
like
just
breaking it a little bit.
But where else do we come, you know, the whole thing with blood and meat and all, you know, is that, and people watching is to do with kashrus, really, you know?
Right.
But the other thing is that now this, you know, it's like somebody looks at something and they're holding it in your hand, it's because to me had something up your sleeve. You know?
But I guess it maybe wasn't called you the wrong plumber line, you know. I got to tell you.
All right. Okay, let's continue. Right to the two dots. Tanya. We learn, it says as follows, in the Braisa, the Omer Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva used to say the following statement. B'shlosh devarim, for three things, oev anies hamadoi. I like this group of people. I like three things that they do. In fact, I love three things that they do. That three things, what do? K'shechotchim, when they cut, es habasar, when they cut their meat, ein chotchin ela al gabi hashulchan. They do not cut it except for on the table. Okay?
Right, so that'll explain the first thing of Rava's thing.
Cutting in the hair. Or in your hand.
That what?
I mean, he, what he's describing here is a direct opposite of what Rava was talking about. Or maybe saying that this is the way it should be done.
Right, not in the
meat
hand,
on the table, not in your hand.
You're supposed to do it on the table.
Right. So if so, Akiva is basically expounding on what Rav was telling him, but doing it in one way, not the other way.
Right.
But cut on the table, don't cut it in your hand.
Right. Exactly.
Maybe,
right.
You know, I'm thinking there might be an element of you might say of stealth here. When you're holding it in your hand, you really, somebody else in the room can't really see what you're doing. You put your cards on the table, so to speak, and then
right.
everybody can see exactly what you're cutting.
Could be. Okay, so therefore it should be on the table. That's the first thing that I really like about these people. And the second thing is kishenoishkin, when they kiss one another, a noishkin el al gav hayad. They only kiss on their hand. And Rashi says over here, what's the significance of this of al gav hayad? As yad chaver, they would. Who no shake? They would kiss their friend's hand. V'der chashivasu zed mitnei harok, and this shows a tremendous amount of chashivas and respect and dignity to the other person because of rok, because of the saliva, the spit that can that is upon one another. So this was some level of chashivas that they would only kiss on the hand and not apparently on the mouth. So that's the second thing that he liked. Ukashu atzin, and when people give counsel to one another, en yatzin el basada, they only give advice in the fields. They don't give advice inside. Omer Rav Ana bar Abba Mikra, what pasuk do we have to support this concept that it's better to give advice, certainly advice that you don't want other people to hear, in a field? Because the pasuk says, Vayishach Yaakov Vayikra L'Rachel Leia Hasada El Tzono. Then when Yaakov called Rachel and Leah, he called them out to the field by his flock. And the significance of this is because he was devising a plan to leave his good old father-in-law, Laban. And therefore he realized the best thing for him was to be able to ask them in an open field while there was no one around, as opposed to in a room where it's very possible that someone could be overhearing us on a corner or another, the opposite side of an adjacent room. So therefore he said that I would always make sure to give advice. And that's what they used to always do. They wouldn't allow people to overhear different conversations. And in fact, Rashi tells us a somewhat famous quote. Rashi says by Dibur Maskil El Masada, the Amri Inshi, because people say, Oznayim Lakosel. That walls have ears, which of course, last I checked, they don't. But the person right next to you, you might not know they're even here, but they can be overhearing everything we say. So therefore, this is the idea of Oznayim Lakosel. It was brought down in the Ben Yoyada. It's just an interesting question because we find this actually very often in the Gemara a double negative. Right? He asks. It's very strange. He says that they do not cut their food except on the table, right? They do not kiss other people's hands, kiss other people, except. So he said, what does it make more sense just to say, I love these people, shechurchim basar al gabay shulchim, because they speak positively. What is all this double negative? They cut meat on the table, they kiss on their hand, and they give advice in the fields. What is it? They don't do this, but. So he says, very obvious answer brought down in Ben Yoyada. He says, "De'i havi nakid hachi." If it would have been written that way, havamina, you would think, "Kachi midasam al harov." That's what the majority of them do. Avol zimnin mitarmi delo abdi hachi. Sometimes you may find some of them that they do not do this. Sometimes, most of the time, they give advice in the field. Sometimes they don't. Sometimes they kiss. Most of the time, they kiss in the hand. Not always. Most of the time, they kiss. Cut the meat on the table. Not always. And therefore, he says in this language, "Ein chodchin ella the ein an shokin ella lomer shelo haya mishanim minhag ze afil pamachas." They would never deviate from this custom, which means that every single person in this community, in this country, this their culture, they did everything the exact same way. They never deviated from their custom. They all did the exact same thing. So that's the concept of why it says they didn't do this except for. Which means that you never would find anyone that would go against these three things. Okay. So that's what he likes so much about them, the way they took care of their food, the way they...
What terminology did they use with people?
Yeah, people from Mad... What is, how does it translate? Medea, yeah.
From Medea?
Medes.
Medes. Which is like...
Well, if you go on, you talk about Pharos and Paras, it's Paras and Modai.
Right.
It's probably the other half, because the next part of the Gemara is about
Persia. Right,
so
right.
It's probably Modai, you know.
Right, so it's pretty close to that area. Fine. But we're going to now see another few things, which are not the same, but exact with the Persians. Tanya Abraham Gamliel, Rabbi Gamliel says, B'shosh d'bar ma'ivan yes ha'parsim. I love the Persians for three things. What are the three great things that they do? Hein sinuin bechilasan. They're very modest in how they eat. Doesn't say how, but they're modest in how they eat.
That they don't eat in front of other people. They go in private quarters. They wouldn't, like, wouldn't eat lahavdil like a McDonald's in front of everybody. They have to go out, you know, eat privately.
They eat privately. Okay. The sinuin bebesa kise. They're modest in the bathroom. The sinuin bedavar acher. And they're also modest in another thing, and Rashi says that's refers to tashmish, but having marital relations, and that the Gemara doesn't even want to mention that word, just called davarach or another thing, because that in itself is sneis to speak that way. And it's brought down in the in Yaakov that we know there's a pasuk that says v'chuko sehem lo seilechu. You're not allowed to follow the laws of the goyim. So it's interesting that you have Rabbi Gamliel saying, oh wow, these guys are so great, they're so great. We wish we should be like that. Yeah, so what do you mean?
These aren't laws. This is, I think, because of the culture.
Okay.
And maybe when it's saying, don't go b'chukos sehem, with something that's bad. These are all good things. There's nothing wrong with any of these things. You know, you talk about b'chukos sehem, okay, if they're idol worships, they're not doing it here. There's nothing that they're not doing that would could be construed as a avodah zarah.
Right.
You know, because they watch the bathroom, they watch how they eat, and they watch, you know, that's, I don't think you could really put it on the same level.
Right, yeah, it's basically how it explains.
We're telling you can even learn,
why is it discussing this at all? I mean, it, obviously, as we said, we can learn, you need to learn things from people.
This whole grouping,
right?
Okay, I mean it's very nice that these Tanaim are telling us what they deem as the proper way,
right?
Where is it fitting into this? Why is this being put into this sequence in the Gemara here? Is the Gemara trying to tell us something that I'm not getting here?
Yeah, how to conduct your life.
But it's
what does this have to do with?
What was the Indian before they were learning? What was the Indian before?
It's a nice long tangent, but it began by discussing about the idea of, which also doesn't sound to be very relevant, but it was the very bottom of Chesed Aleph talked about the importance of saying Shnai Mekar Echad Targum. Right? You're supposed to say to learn the Parsha every week.
And what was before that? What were we doing before that?
And before that, we were...
Tefillah.
We eventually got way up there. It was Tefillah.
Right.
But then we... Yeah. But then, see, we had Rabbi Yehuda. It's, the key is you have a person by the name of Rabbi Huna Bar Yehuda,
right,
who we got to. And then once we mentioned him, we brought down this idea. And then we brought what he said, and then once we said that, we had the Shnai Mekar Echad Targum, and then that was one of the pieces of advice that Rabbi Yehuda ben Levi gave his children. And then once we started talking about giving advice,
I think it's about the way Jews should conduct their lives. I think it's just a series of things how we should conduct our lives. What are the from whatever one thing led to another, but it's basically how we should, you know.
There's a way of saying this is what you should be doing, rather than say, I like these people because of.
But for the same reason, why do you have a Agadata in the Gemara? All these things are all there's the mushals to teach us how to. Sometimes they don't want to come right out and say it You know, boom, you got to do this, you got to do this. They do it in a roundabout way, but you get the message. And I think that's basically what it is. It's like, what do you need in Agartha? What do you need all these? There's a message to be learned. And I think the same thing is they're giving you messages, but they're not coming out strictly, this is, Chokal Mishpat here, this is the way it should be done. Maybe. I don't know.
I mean, it's interesting that these are things that they advise their children. Like, these, they could also be advising me, everyone. They could be advising the children other things, and they could be, why are they specifically saying this to their kids as opposed to
because if
the
it's good
populace.
Enough for their kids, it's good enough for you too.
But he does, he only told this to his kids.
Yeah, but why would it be in the Gemara if you only tell this? So you have a private conversation with your kids, who knows about it? But the fact that they went and put it in the Gemara is to teach everybody the lessons of what
it shows that when he taught his kids,
it
was
for his kids, he's right, he's teaching it to everybody.
That's yeah, right. Okay, good. Good enough. All right, so we have one more line, and then we actually get back into this Masechta, which is we'll get to that too. Okay, so the pasuk says, because we're already talking about the Persians and their modesty, the pasuk says, "Ani suvesi l'maktishi," that I've been commanded to be prepared for something. And it's interpreted, this is completely, has nothing to do with anything, except that it's interpreted that this pasuk in Yeshaya is referring to the Parsiim, the Persians, and that Tani Rav Yosef says that this pasuk specifically is Eloh Parsiim, is the Persians, Hamukdashim Umuzmanim L'Gehenim, that they're prepared and destined to go to Gehenim. That was a little piece of it. How we end off there.
Despite of it, we award them for their modesty.
Which is an interesting thing that even when it comes to someone who's a Russia, someone who's going to go to Hanum, you
can
still learn positive.
From anybody. That's right. That's basically the story is.
Right. Okay. Moving on to the next piece of Gemara, which actually brings us back to the first Mishnah in the Masechta, which is where we're still up to, which is the words of Rabbi Gamliel Omer. Rabbi Gamliel said something. What is this referring to? So if we refer back to Beis Amud Aleph, the very first word, not the first words of the Mishnah, but you have the last time to say the Shema, which is after the word Me'amasai, you have the second line, which is Ad Sof HaShmur HaRishona, that you have Divrei Rabbi Elazar, according to Rabbi Elazar, you have only until the end of the first watch, which, assuming that there's three watches in the evening, and sunset 6 p.m., sunrise is 6 a.m., so that would be 10 o'clock p.m., is the last time to say the Shema. The Chachamim Omrim Ad Chatzos, you have until midnight. However, Rabbi Gamliel Omer, Ad Shi'al Amud HaShachar, you have until Amud HaShachar, which is the time before Netzacham, before sunrise, before the sun actually begins to rise. Sometime before that is called Amud HaShachar. So there's a three-way machlokas. The question is, what do we hold like? What is the halacha with regards to saying the Shema at night? So that's what the Mishnah said. Now we continue on Chesamad Beis. Amar Rav Yehuda Mishmuel, halacha k'Rabbi Gamliel. In fact, the halacha is like Rabbi Gamliel, that you can say the Shema the entire evening, Ad Shiel Amud HaShachar, Amud HaShachar. Fine, yes. Tanya Rav Shimon ben Yochai Omer, Rav Shimon Yochai says the following. A nice little loophole in halacha over here. Pa'amim sh'adim kar krishma shtei pa'amim b'layla achas. It's possible you can say the Shema two times b'layla achas on the same night. You said the Shema two times. One of the times achas is kodem shi'al amud ha'shachar. One is right before amud ha'shachar. V'achas l'achas shal amud ha'shachar. One is right after Amud HaShachar, but before Netzachama, before sunrise, but it's after Amud HaShachar. And you can fulfill both mitzvahs. So you can, one during the day and one at night. So if you just said that, if it's Amud HaShachar, let's say 5 in the morning, so you can say Shema 458, and then say the second
502.
One, 502, exactly. And you will be all set. You can take the rest of the day off, right? All right. So that's what he said. You can fulfill the day and the night by saying it right before Moedah Shachar, right afterwards.
Actually, it's the night and the day.
The night and then the day, right, exactly.
I know, it says both the day and the night, but really it's the night and the day.
That's true. It says it that way? Yeah. It's you can fulfill, right. Okay, that's true. It should be the other way around. Haguf Akasha. But the Gemara asks a different question. It says, in itself, in his words, in the words of Rav Shimon ben Yochai, in itself is an apparent contradiction. Amrit, first you said, Pa'amim Sha'adim Kari Krishma, Shtei Pa'amim Balaila. You said you can say Shema two times at night, which means you're saying both of the times you're saying the Shema while it's still night. I don't know what does that imply. L'achar shelo Moedah Shachar Lailahu, that even though it's already Moedah Shachar, it's still considered
night.
Because you said you can say the Shema twice at night. So it must mean after Moedah Shachar is night. V'hadar Tani, then afterwards, what did you say? Afterwards you said, Yotzmeh hen yedei chavaso, achar shel yom, achar shel laila, that you fulfill the obligation one at night, and also one during the day. Which implies Alma Yamamahu. Implies that you said once it's already Moedah Shachar, it's halachically already considered to be day. So what is it? Is between Moedah Shachar and Netzach Amah during that time, that window, is that halachically considered day or is it halachically considered to be night? Okay. So the Gemara says Lo Olam Lailu. After Moedah Shachar, but before sunrise, Netzach Amah, it's still considered to be night. But nonetheless, you can still fulfill the mitzvah of saying the Shema at that time for the day. Why? Because we can call it day as far as fulfilling the mitzvah of saying the Shema, because there are people that get up at that time.
When is that time?
Nates. That's by Shmon Esrei, you say the Shema like right before it, but Pasikin is by Netzach Amah. So that's for sure. There's heterim to say the Shmon Esrei before, but it's better to say it by Netzach Amah, by sunrise. But this is the idea that after Moedah Shachar, because people are getting up, it's already halachically good enough to say the Shema, which means it's still nighttime. However, the Torah doesn't say the Shema at day, doesn't say the Shema at night. It says,
that's when you get up.
Right, so just as long as that there are people, not you, because if you're saying you have to be awake, but just as long as there's a populace of people that are already getting up at that time, which halakhically we say, but once it's a Moedah Shachar, people are already getting up at that time. So therefore, because of that, even though it's night, you still fulfill the mitzvah of the day because there are people getting up, and therefore you fulfill the mitzvah of Uvkumecha, because the people are getting up at that time. And we'll see the next piece, which is the exact same Shachavataria question answer format in reverse, and we'll stop. Omrav Achavar Chanino, Omrav Yeshua Ben Levi, Halakha Krav Shimon Yochai. He says the law is like him, that you could actually do this. Okay. Some people learn it using the opposite scenario. The Sanyo Shimon Yochai Yomar Shimon says Mishum in the name of Rabbi Kiva. Three lines in the bottom. Pa'amim Sha'adim Kar Kriya Shema Shtei Pa'amim Biyom. It's possible you can say Shema two times during the day. Achas Kodim HaNetzach Amah. The Achas L'Achar Netzach Amah. One time before sunrise. One time after sunrise. V'yotzmeh Yedei Chavaso Achas Shol Yom V'Achas Shol Laila. And you can fulfill both the mitzvah of saying the Shema during the day and during the night. So the Gemara asks the same question. Haguf Akasha. That in itself is an apparent contradiction. Amrit, initially you said, Pa'amim Shadim Kur Krishma Shtei Pa'amim Biyom. That a person can say the Shema two times during the day, right? Which means, Alma implying that the first time when you said it, which was before Netzach Amah, before sunrise, Kodem Netzach Amah, Yamamahu. You must be saying that that's day, because you said you're saying it twice during the day. So before, right before sunrise, right before Netzach Amah, is day. It's Yamamahu. The Hadar Tani, afterwards, what did you say? Yotzehen Yedei Chavaso Achashol Yom Achashol Laila. How could you say you're fulfilled the mitzvah of saying the Shema at night? Amal Lailahu. That implies it must be nighttime. That if you, it's not yet Netzach Amah, if it's not yet sunrise, then it's still considered halakhically It's still considered to be night. So the Gemara answers, Tesamad Aleph, lo. No. Lo'olam yimamahu. Really, it's considered to be daytime. Even though it's not Netzachama yet, it's still considered to be daytime. Right? Behind the Karle Laila, why do we say it's night? That if you say the Shema before Netz HaChama, unlike Rabbi Gamliel, Rabbi Gamliel said you should say it until Amud HaShachar. This is saying you can even say it until Netz HaChama, which is later, to fulfill the mitzvah of saying the Shema at night. How could you do so? It's considered halachically day already. Once it's Amud HaShachar, it's halachically day. Because the Ika Inshi Diganu Bahishaita, there are plenty of people that are still sleeping at that time. Therefore, it's still halachically considered B'Shachbacha, when people are still lying down. And therefore, just as long as it's not yet Netzachama, you can still say the Shema and fulfill the mitzvah of the night. So even though it's still halachically day, but still,
people sleeping.
Because the Torah doesn't tell you have to say the Shema day or night, so this is why people are sleeping.
So the whole concept of establishing a time pattern, Krishma, be day, night, anything else, is all relevant to what is your pattern of sleep.
What the way the Gemara says it is, to iki inshi, there are people. No. What does that mean? How many people? A cluster?
But basically, they've changed the night pattern. The people will, good group will start getting up.
Right.
Even though it's still night.
Right.
And the day pattern's changed. The good group is still sleeping.
Right.
So that they're really giving you a leeway here. Okay. That it's not really time related.
Right.
Because everybody will find
their own cycle
to say Shema.
Right.
The important thing is to say Shema
when you get up and when you go to sleep.
That's basically it. But the whole premise of the Mishnah,
right,
of when can you say Shema up to what time, is now disallowed by these
persons.
But halachically, at a certain point, we say that it's no longer halachically a time you can say Shema at night.
But they've changed day and night,
yes,
based on what a group of people are doing.
We change the principle of B'Shach B'Cha of Kamecha.
Right.
Because the Torah doesn't require you to say Shema necessarily because it's day, because it's night.
Exactly. So therefore, then there is really no Zman Kriyashma.
It's not directly correlated to whether it's halachically day or halachically night. You still have to say it while during the time frame when people are sleeping and during the time frame that people are awake.
But there's a leeway of one or two hours.
There's a leeway in this case, there's a leeway of Amud HaShachar, between Amud HaShachar and Netz HaChama. Because if you look at the two two Gemaras.
That period of time is still day or night based on group of people.
Exactly. Which means on one day you could be saying the Shema between that time and fulfill the mitzvah at night.
Right.
And the next couple days later, whatever you can say it.
During the day.
Right. Exactly. So that's like a time where... But it's interesting that it doesn't say now that you can say the Shema twice between Amud HaShachar and Netz HaChama. You can't do that twice. It says you can do one before it and one after. In other words, you can do one before it or one after it. You can't do both between Netz HaChama, between Amud HaShachar and Netz HaChama. That's what it said. You can do it before and after, or before and after.
In the first situation, it says you can do it before Amud HaShachar, and then after Amud HaShachar.
Right.
Because some people are waking up before Amud HaShachar.
Right.
Some are after.
So before Amud HaShachar, but before Netz HaChama, you could potentially say...
Right. That's the first explanation. So you fulfill the mitzvah during the day, even though it's not yet.
But it's not
really day.
But it's before
Nates.
It's before Nates.
As long as people are getting up, it's okay.
So people are getting up at that time, right? But then the second piece says that you can fulfill the mitzvah during that time slot,
right,
the one at night.
Right, because you're still sleeping.
Because there's still people sleeping.
Even after Nates.
Right, but the point is that you can't say that you can't say both Shema twice between Amud HaShachar and Netz, and say, well, the first time is for the night,
right,
because there's still some people sleeping, and then a second later you say the Shema again, and say, well, there's some people during the
getting
same
up,
time that
so
are getting
no,
up.
You can't
it implies,
up both ways.
And it sounds like you can only do one a time. You know what I'm saying?
What's the time sequence between Amud HaShachar and Netz?
I don't have the exact time, but it's like, let's call it an hour, let's say. It depends. Some say something like that, right. So, yeah, that time, halakhically, we say we don't care if it's day or night. You can say Shema and fulfill either one, but implying you can only do one, not the other. Fine. And on this, the Gemara concludes, we can discuss this at greater length next week, but the Gemara says, on the top of Tesamud Aleph is where we'll stop, that in fact, Omer Rabbi Yaakov, Rabbi Chanina, Omer Rabbi Yoshua and Levi, Halacha Krev Shimon, 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 Rabbi Kiva. The Halacha is like this. However, Omer Zer, Vlad Shalom, Yomer Hashkivenu. You shouldn't say Hashkivenu at that time, because Hashkivenu means when I'm going to sleep, which has to be the early, when people are beginning to go to sleep. That Baracha is connected to that. Shema is anytime. Even when, just as long as people are sleeping. But the Baruch of Hashkivenu is connected to Techila Shechiva, the beginning of one's going to sleep. So therefore, even though you fulfill the mitzvah of the Shema, you wouldn't say Hashkivenu at that point.